Kim Weavers, Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, and at yesterday's monthly board meeting, Kim, the chief accountant of the Employee Benefits Security Administration proposed some tests of the Thrift Savings Plan's security system to make sure that the system is secure as it should be. What are the tests that he's proposing and criticizing the board for not implementing, and why has the board not chosen to do them so far? Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me. We are going to do them. It's a matter of timing. What they want to do is called a penetration test, and it is where you try and see if you can hack into the system. And there are two kinds of penetration testing. One is where you're coming from outside the system. You're, you know, some bad guy in somebody's basement hacking in. And obviously, since anyone can do that at any time, we said knock yourself out. The issue that we're having is what is called credentialed penetration testing, where you're inside the system and you're able to move around as though you have network permissions. And what is required when you're doing a penetration testing are ground rules, so that both sides understand what tools are going to be used, what's the goals, what's going to be accomplished, and importantly for our participants, what are the security and liability issues associated with that? Because in this kind of inside testing, what they're actually doing is going or proposing to do is go into live accounts so that they could get into my account and potentially move my account balance from, you know, $1,000 to $500,000. And while if it goes up, that's nice. If it goes down, not so much. And we want to have those ground rules in place before we would allow any penetration testing. That's what we owe to our participants. We act solely in their interest. And so acting solely in their interest means we have great security, IT security. It also means we don't do anything foolish that puts their data at risk.
So you said at the beginning that this is a matter of timing. What are the elements of timing that are involved in making sure that this is done in a way that you can learn the results that you need to know and also protect the interest of the participants?
It's sitting down with the auditors and working through the ground rules. This is not like in years. This is like in weeks or months, mm-hmm. depending on how quickly we can come to the ground rules.
Because the 800-pound gorilla in the room here, I'm sure, that you're dealing with is the data breach, and folks, if they're not aware, especially participants aren't aware, thinking, oh, no, here we go again. So I imagine that's a particular area of sensitivity for
Absolutely.
You and your team.
I think any organization that has experienced a cyber attack is very, very sensitive to this. We always valued IT security. We valued it even more, obviously, after the cyber attack occurred. We hired, I have to say, an excellent chief information security officer, and there have been a wide range of things that we have done. In just the last 2 years, we've closed about 50% of our open audit findings. So it's not like we've been sitting around waiting for someone to tell us, you know, here's something good to do. We have been moving out smartly, and we take this very seriously. As I said, it's our imperative. We operate solely in the interest of the participants. We do not, however, want to do something that could break the system that we have to run every night to make sure that people's accounts are updated correctly. And it really was sort of the tale of two auditors, if I can wax rhapsodic. we had one auditor come in who does our financial opinion, and they also look at IT security issues, because obviously you need to have secure systems to feed good financial data in. And we got a clean financial opinion, as we always have, and that auditor was very, very complimentary about the strides that we've made over the last several years, the improvements we've made. They noted that, you know, there are still things to do, and I'm pretty sure that there's no agency or organization in this whole country that doesn't still have things on their to-do list for IT security. So it's a matter of how you frame things. Is there stuff left to do? Absolutely. Are we going to do it? You bet. Are we going to do it willy-nilly? No, because that's not our role.
The first ever Charles Dickens reference from Kim Weaver, the Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, and nicely done, I must say.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Another topic at this meeting yesterday was the budget resolution that the House and Senate are currently negotiating. What's in there that might potentially affect you and the way you do business at the TSP?
Well, the House Budget Committee report, or the House Budget Resolution, excuse me, charged the Government Reform and Oversight Committee with coming up with $100 billion in savings. Then the Budget Committee report contained a list of ideas of the way to achieve those savings. And as I think we discussed last month, one of the ideas was changing the statutory G fund interest rate. And while that doesn't mean it would actually happen, it obviously means it's something that we have to watch very carefully. So what we're looking for is whether the conferenced budget resolution comes out, and does it still require savings from government reform and now governmental affairs on the Senate side, or have they limited that? And based on press accounts, it seems to be an open question as to how that's going to develop.
What does the TSP have to do if that eventually becomes law and the way that interest is paid on the G fund changes?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that. the G fund serves three purposes for us. It's a money market account, it's a TIPS account, an inflation protection account, and it's a stable value account. And when it first came out, and I think when we spoke last time, we talked about the fact that we would need to go to Congress most likely and get legislation to allow us to create a different fund to serve those other two purposes, the inflation protection and the stable value. Because if the interest rate was changed, the G fund would become basically a money market account, not paying anything in interest, or to be precise, 0.01% in interest. But as we've, over the last month, done some additional research, what we're beginning to be concerned about is that the size of the G fund, which is just shy of $200 billion, we would swamp the stable value market. And we are beginning to be concerned that we would not be in a position to replace the G fund with a stable value account. We haven't reached that conclusion finally, and I don't want anyone driving off the road here. But it is something that we hadn't initially considered. But as always with our size, we don't want to invest in a segment of the market where our movement changes the price, and that is the concern we would have.
I note that a number of veterans groups and military advocacy organizations, five in particular with over 3 million members, are endorsing the Military Compensation Commission's call for a 401k-style retirement plan. Now, we haven't learned details, to my knowledge, about what that would look like or who would provide it. Secretary Carter at the Defense Department has talked about it, but only in very broad terms. But what does that say to you about with these people already endorsing something like what you already have in light of the potential changes that we could be seeing as a result, not just of the budget resolution, but of other possible legislation about military compensation?
Well, the Military Commission specifically talks to the TSP and recommends that new members are automatically enrolled in the TSP and then get an employer match starting after 2 years. And we are very supportive of that. We were quite pleased to see the endorsement from the five service organizations in support of that. The DOD is the one who keeps talking to the 401k-like plan, and so that is something that, again, we're watching to see what that might mean. As that develops, we will be obviously reaching out to them and working and playing well with others.
But you gave me a number before we went on the air, Kim, that tells me that the military members themselves are kind of already voting with their feet. I mean, you told me $2.5 billion in the Roth TSP option, and half of that's from people in uniform.
That is exactly right. When we rolled out the Roth TSP option, we rolled it out with uniformed services in mind, because TSP, traditional TSP, where you're deferring your taxes, is useful only if you're paying any significant tax. But for uniformed service members who tend to be lower and younger paid, your new ones, obviously, deferring tax isn't that important to them. But being able to put in post-tax money that can then grow and be withdrawn at age 59 and a half tax-free, that is an enormous value. And we are extremely pleased that the uniformed services members who are participating have realized that.